This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
These are families that have relatives in the DRC, and so they would be more comfortable at home. And two, the DRC, because it has been having this outbreak for the last 10 months, have available the therapeutic treatment for which these people could benefit.
That's Uganda's health minister on the decision to repatriate to the DRC five members of a family who were exposed to the Ebola virus that killed two relatives. Details next. Also, the State Department has appointed Ambassador Donald Booth as a special envoy to Sudan. And two former prime ministers have been detained as part of Algeria's ongoing crackdown on corruption. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, Uganda has repatriated five Ebola patients to the neighboring Democratic Republic of the Congo for better treatment and handling. They are part of the family that crossed into Uganda from the DRC with the first confirmed Ebola case outside the country that has been hit by the second worst outbreak of the deadly disease. Two deaths have been confirmed following the outbreak that was announced on Tuesday night in the Kasese district. The Ugandan government today banned public gatherings in Kasese. Catherine Nambi reports from Kampala.
In a meeting between officials from Uganda's health ministry and the Beni Ebola response team from Democratic Republic of Congo, DRC, it was agreed that DRC is better placed to handle the five suspected Ebola patients. Dr. Jane Ruth Acheng is Uganda's health minister.
These are families that have relatives in the DRC, and so they would be more comfortable at home. And two, the DRC, because it has been having this outbreak for the last 10 months, have available the therapeutic treatment for which these people could benefit from.
Uganda declared an Ebola outbreak on Tuesday night after a five-year-old boy tested positive for the deadly hemorrhagic fever and then died. Tests from two other suspects, including the boy's 50-year-old grandmother and his three-year-old brother, also tested positive. The woman also has died. The two bodies have been buried in a public cemetery in Uganda under tight supervision. Acheng insists that no victim will be forced to return to DRC.
We have allowed this on condition that those who are able to talk give consent. If they want and they are willing to go to the DRC, they will go. For those who are not willing, we shall keep them in Uganda.
Those repatriated this morning include the three-year-old boy, his parents, an eight-month-old baby, and a maid to the family. Gasta Shapenda is the coordinator of the Beni Ebola response team in the DRC. He has expressed readiness of his team to handle the Ebola patients, saying they have the required expertise.
Treatment that we are performing in DRC, specific treatment against Ebola. This is an opportunity to give to those people who are seeking, to recover their health. This is why we made this advocacy to the health ministry to come back with the people.
According to Acheng, the isolation center at Bwera Hospital and the Ebola treatment unit in Kasese district will remain open to handle any other possible cases.
We have 50 listed contacts that we are following up, and any of the contacts is a potential patient. And so we shall keep our isolation facility open and continue in the response mode, monitoring these contacts, and also in readiness for any other case that may cross from the DRC into Uganda.
According to Uganda's health ministry, there is no confirmed case of Ebola in the country at the moment. However, three suspected cases not related to the repatriated family remain under isolation, awaiting test results from the Uganda Virus Research Institute. Uganda has had five Ebola outbreaks since 2000. These are the first confirmed cases outside the DRC since current outbreak was reported in August. As of June 4th, 2,025 confirmed and probable cases have been recorded in the DRC, with two-thirds dying. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
Sudan's opposition has refused to negotiate with the Transitional Military Council in Khartoum. The pro-democracy activists are calling on the military council to remove the paramilitary rapid support forces from the streets of the capital. Reporter Mangu Ugel has more from Khartoum.
The Sudanese military council is investigating 68 army and national security officers who believe to have been planning for a coup on junta. There is a media briefing expected this evening by the Sudanese military council to share more light on this development.
What is the reaction of the people to this latest report?
It brought a lot of panic among citizens, especially civilians, after the recent crackdown on the protesters that happened last week. Many people were afraid, actually, and they expect things might even go back to violence again after the last 2 days, which was, up to now, it is reported, calm.
I understand that top U.S. diplomats are in Khartoum, including Ambassador Donald Booth, there in Khartoum to mediate between the pro-democracy protesters and the military council. Do you know anything about that?
Tibur Naj has also arrived to Khartoum and has been in a series of meetings with the junta and oppositions, but up to now there is no result yet been leaked or nor any media briefing been made. So it remains unclear whether they are going to have a media briefing after all these meetings, or they might even only support the mediation of the Ethiopian special envoy. So far, the Ethiopian mediation has managed to convince the junta to release four political detainees, that is Yasir Arman, Mubarak Ardul, and Khamis Jalab of the SPLM North. In addition, yesterday, last evening, they released Muhammad Asmat, and he is a senior opposition figure. So these are the only development people could see, something tangible here that, okay, the Ethiopian mediation has done so far up to now.
The activists have called off their nationwide strike. And I was also seeing pictures on the Sudan television. The rapid support forces are busy clearing roadblocks.
Yes, the opposition has called off their strike, which ended on Tuesday. Life is normal on the streets of Khartoum, despite the heavy deployment of the rapid support forces all over every corner. But people are, back to their day-to-day life, going and coming. And the Freedom and Change forces just announced last evening saying they are not ready yet to, sit with military junta at the moment, because there are certain conditions that they asked for it earlier. But one of them is that the junta is not genuine and they could not be trusted. One of the conditions they gave earlier was that the junta should remove all the security forces from the streets of Khartoum. But up to today, they are physically seen in all corners of the street. So they say they are not ready to sit with the junta to discuss any further negotiation or power sharing again with them, unless they are going to talk about how the military is going to hand power.
That's Mungu Ugel, VOA South Sudan in Focus reporter in Khartoum, speaking to John Tanza. As you heard in our earlier report, the State Department has appointed Ambassador Donald Booth as a special envoy to Sudan. He and Assistant Secretary of State Tibor Naj will attend meetings in Khartoum with pro-democracy protesters and the Transitional Military Council. A State Department spokeswoman says the U.S. is urging security forces to end attacks on civilians, withdraw the Rapid Support Force from Khartoum, and allow an independent investigation of the recent violence. Paul Nantulia, a research associate at Africa Center for Strategic Studies, spoke with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi about what the U.S. may be able to do to pressure the Transitional Military Council on the transition to civilian rule.
Well, it's very important, first of all, that the United States and other foreign powers speak and act with one voice and put their support behind a single program. And that program should be based on nothing else other than the rapid conclusion of the negotiations that have been suspended between the Sudan Professionals Alliance and their collaborators and the military leadership in Khartoum. And the object of those negotiations should be a speedy transfer of power to civilian hands, to establish a transitional administration that returns the country to democratic rule. This should be the focus, and the international community owes it to the Sudanese people and owes it to the African continent to move with one voice and to put all their weight behind that single objective. That is everybody's expectation. It is quite clear that what is happening within the so-called Transitional Military Council is that elements that have strong ties with Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, are tightening their control and their grip over the political process and over the pace of whatever was being negotiated, which of course has been suspended after the fatal shooting of over 124 peaceful protesters on the streets. So it is very concerning. You see a hardening of views and a hardening of positions, which has only confirmed the fears and the concerns of the Sudan Professionals Association and other elements of the Forces for Declaration of Freedom and Change. So it is a very tricky situation, given that once again, you seem to have what appears to be international intervention in a partial way and in a manner that strengthens the hand of those elements within the military that would like to continue controlling power against the wishes of the Sudanese society.
Can the Ethiopian mediation between the two sides succeed, and under what circumstances?
It will succeed, again, if there's unity of effort. It will succeed if there's honesty in acknowledging the fact that this body that calls itself the Transitional Military Council is now dominated by the commander of the Rapid Support Forces, Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, also known as Hemeti. This is a group that has its roots in the Janjaweed militia, a militia that was implicated in crimes against humanity in Darfur. It's about between 30,000 to 40,000 strong, and it overshadows the military and overshadows intelligence. So it's very important that as these negotiations proceed, the international community must not lose sight of the fact that powerful elements within this Transitional Military Council, as it calls itself, are out there and are being implicated in moves that are clearly calculated at diverting this process and frustrating the transition to civilian rule.
So how could the pro-democracy protesters in Sudan succeed in achieving their goal of a transition to a civilian rule?
There are three things. One, they need to keep up the pressure, because of course Sudan is still a long way towards achieving that objective. Second, they are committed to maintaining a non-violent posture, which is very courageous, but it also shows their level of sophistication and the level of support they have. Third, they will need to continue to galvanize all the different forces, all the different shades of opinion in the country, all the different segments of the Sudanese society are reflected in this pro-democracy movement. So they would need to maintain that character, the diversity of that resistance, the non-violent nature of that resistance, and they would need to keep up the pressure for them to then be able to navigate the country towards stability.
That was Paul Nantulia, a research associate at Africa Center for Strategic Studies, speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawy. 20 past the hour, you're listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. Two former prime ministers have been detained as part of Algeria's ongoing crackdown on corruption linked to officials and associates of President Abdelaziz Bouteflika, who resigned under pressure. State TV said ex-Prime Minister Abdelmalik Salal was ordered held today, a day after former Prime Minister Ahmed Ouyaya was jailed. A number of other top businessmen also have been detained pending trial, along with Bouteflika's youngest brother and two former intelligence chiefs. The high cost of living, fueled by skyrocketing inflation and foreign currency shortages, has become the order of the day in Zimbabwe in a bid to ease the price hikes of basic commodities that were changing by the day. The Grain Millers Association of Zimbabwe reached an agreement with retailers on new prices last week. Reporter Kudzai Zanawashi has the details.
Karikai Chawunza is the spokesperson of the Grain Millers Association of Zimbabwe. He explains the rollout of their price monitors into the market.
Starting from last week, Monday, we deployed groups of price monitors from the Grain Millers Association of Zimbabwe, where we are monitoring prices, the agreed prices of our commodities which we do produce. This initiative came after we had agreed with the Confederation of Zimbabwe retailers that we should price our commodities at those prices.
The agreed prices have been pegged at 9 RTGS dollars, 20 cents for 5 kg maize meal. Some households need more than 20 kgs per month. In other parts of the market, prices have been dramatically increasing by the day. Yet the income of government employees and many in the private sector has not increased in months. Lucky Zhou is a teacher employed by the government.
What makes matters worse is that there is a market distortion in terms of pricing. You find one product goes for as little as $10. The same product, if you go to another shop, you get it as much as $18, $15. This distortion is making matters worse. You can't really plan.
Confusion aside, Joel says civil servants have been hard hit by the price surge.
The situation has really gone so bad to the extent that most households are now suffering, particularly us, the civil servants. Basically, we're earning something like 600 RTGS dollars. And if we were to look at the cost of surviving in this current context, it's really beyond our means.
This is happening against a backdrop of another fuel price increase. Wednesday, Zimbabweans woke up to 5 RTGS dollars 26 cents per liter of petrol from 4 RTGS dollars 97 cents. Diesel is now pegged at 5 RTGS dollars 7 cents from 4 RTGS dollars 89 cents. The finance minister, Ntuli Ncube, has often reassured Zimbabweans that the country is on the path to recovery, citing a 500 million RTGS dollar budget surplus. But critics have argued the surplus does no good if people are suffering. Most Zimbabweans are hopeful the monetary policy set to be presented by Ncube in July will bring much-needed solutions to the economy. In the past week, President Emmerson Mnangagwa hinted that Zimbabwe will have a new currency by year's end, even though the RTGS dollars were introduced earlier this year as a currency on its own. As the economic situation gets worse, health workers have threatened to go on strike soon if their salaries are not increased to match the cost of living. Tension is building in the country. Yesterday, the youth wing of the main opposition party, Movement for Democratic Change, vowed to take to the streets to register their displeasure on the economy. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashi from Harare.
Zimbabwe's Association of Healthcare Funders say the number of people seeking medical help has fallen by 50% since last year because of the rising cost of drugs not covered by insurance. Many Zimbabweans are turning to herbal treatments that health analysts warn are not always helpful. But as Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare, President Emmerson Mnangagwa's government says a solution is on the way.
51-year-old Nkululeko Mbambo broke his right ankle. He is outside the Harare's Parinyatwa Hospital after being discharged. Mbambo says he has no painkillers or any other drugs prescribed by the doctors to help him recover. He says his medical insurance is not being accepted by many health institutions and pharmacies.
They said they are taking too long to pay for the services.
They said the health insurance is taking too long to pay for the services. So at times we pay cash if they do not accept these medical insurances. You know, nowadays, cash is scarce to get. That's a big challenge. It is people like Mbambo who, according to the Association of Healthcare Funders, either limit their medical treatment or do not seek it out at all. They have medical insurance, but health institutions do not accept it, or the cost of health services has gone beyond their coverage. With nowhere else to turn, they seek out medical drugs or herbs sold on the street. Their sellers do not want to be identified for fear of being arrested. This herbalist insists hair products are a good replacement for medicines. So it is money problems and the strength of herbs which make people use them instead of medicines, she says. Some say medicines are now expensive, but it is the strength of herbs which bring them here after hearing from those who would have been healed, she says. But Dr. Norman Matara from the Zimbabwe Association for Doctors for Human Rights says herbs are not the answer to the rising price of drugs and health care.
Some of the herbs that have been used by people, those are things that have not been tested in the labs. We do not know their effects on the liver. We do not know their effects on the kidneys. So you might end up actually having a kidney failure from using herbs which have not been scientifically proven and which have not been proven to be safe and effective.
So what should be done? Dr. Matara again.
So we really urge the government to consider investing more into healthcare. And we also want the government to look at the issue of providing a national health insurance scheme, which is like a pro-poor people.
Zimbabwe's Minister of Health and Child Care, Obadiah Moyo, says the government is working on the issue and it has started sourcing medical drugs. He says that on Wednesday, the government of India donated drugs worth $250,000.
The more medicine that we get, the less will be the cost to the client. You know, so we are working on a plan to make sure that we fill up our warehouses, we fill up our pharmacies, you know, to the brim. And we shall then be able to also supply, you know, through that same mechanism, the private pharmacies. They will have to reduce their prices. And then we will end up with more patients arriving at the institutions.
Lower prices would be good news for people like Nkululeko Mbambo, who cannot get the medications they need for a full and fast recovery. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Thanks for choosing The Voice of America. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Thank you.
Looking for something? Headline news, interviews, analysis? We've got it all on voaafrica.com.
voaafrica.com.